We are in the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Vic, starting hour number three on Twitter. You mad? Because Zeke's conserving his body for all those board meetings and graduations that he'll be attending in the future? Signed, D. Rose. It's funny you mentioned D. Rose. I've got something that relates to D. Rose in a minute. Lee Jenkins joins me next segment. SI senior writer's done it again, wrote a very interesting piece on Dwight Howard. ATP coming up after that. All right, speaking of D. Rose, look, you know me, I don't root. I'm paid to do a job, which means I'm a professional. And as a result, I can't root. I can't have favorites. I am here to be objective, but I'm also honest, and I'm going to shoot straight. And I do have a favorite basketball player. They pay me not to have favorites, but I have to admit, I do have a favorite basketball player. His name is Michael Beasley. He's not just my favorite player. He's your favorite player's favorite player. Ask him. Now, you remember the Bees, right? He was the second pick in the 08 draft, right behind the aforementioned Derrick Rose. And Beasley is right behind Rose again, becoming a Knick right after Rose goes to Cleveland. And honestly, I wish he got to New York years ago because he is exactly what the Knicks have needed. Ask him about that, too. He met with the media yesterday, and frankly, it was even better than I could have ever expected. He hit on everything, starting with his expectations for the team this season. This is Michael Beasley. Quote, "If Tim Hardaway Jr., Carmelo Anthony, Kristaps Porzingis, and myself are on the same roster, those are four guys that can score 25 a night. Then you add in Lance Thomas, Kyle O'Quinn, Joakim Noah. Let's not forget about that all-star," end quote. 25 points per game. Dude, you had a game with 25 points last year. One. Now, normally I'd say, let's pump the brakes on 25 per night. But not this time, because I'm feeling it with Beasley. He's got me believing. And if you're a Knicks fan, he should have you believing. Because this is a new season, and he really doesn't give a damn that Vegas is putting the Knicks' win total at around 31. When asked about that, he said, quote, "Whatever happened last year is what happened. But I'm here now. And I'm going to do everything I can to get everyone on the same page. Even if that page is beating me up every day in practice. Whatever I have to do to get us to come together on the floor is what I'm going to do. Do I see us better than a 30-win team in Vegas? Listen, I don't even go to Vegas. So yeah, I do. I think we've got a position to not only be a playoff team, but a 5-6 seed team if we do it right." End quote. Again, normally I would say that declaring the Knicks to be a 5 or a 6 seed when they might still dump Melo is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. One of the dumbest things I've heard since D. Rose up and declared them to be a super team. But I'm not saying that, not this time. Because if Beasley believes it, Rome believes it. And the next part is something I want to believe more than I've ever believed in anything. Because unlike some guys who have preceded him in New York, Beasley is not saving himself for life after basketball. Because he doesn't see a life after basketball. At least not for a long, long, long time.
I'm still young, bro. Yeah. I'm 28. I plan to play at least on 43.
I'm still young, bro. I'm 28. I plan to play at least until I'm 43. And then he added, quote, "So you do the math." All right, I will. 15 more years? You plan to play until you're, quote, 43. Again, normally I'd be saying, what, where? And I'd be saying that 43 is a very strange age just to throw out there. Yeah, well, hey, I'm young, bro. I plan on playing until I'm 44 and a half. But you see, again, that's not me, not today. Because I'm looking at the glass being half full. I'm picking out the part where Beasley says, I plan to play at least until I'm 43. So what you're talking about is he could blow right by 43 and go to 47, 48, even 50. This cat can be Tom Brady in shorts. And no, I'm not going to point out that he's been on 6 teams in 10 years. And that if he played until he was 43, he wouldn't just run out of teams, he'd run out of leagues. That's not the point here. Not when we're celebrating B. Beasley because he's not looking to play mediocre ball until he's in his mid-40s. He's got much bigger plans. Much, much, much bigger plans.
I still think I have a chance to be, you know, one of the best in the NBA. Like your favorite player. I'm your favorite player, slave player. You know, and it's not enough for me, for him to know that. Nah, I want the world to know, you know, so I'm still working hard as if I can be the best ever. If you doubt it, if you don't believe it, just make my story, my triumph that much better.
Hell freaking yes. Yeah, I mean, the reporters are like laughing as he's saying this. Did you hear what he just said? Alvin, re-rack that. He just said, I'm your favorite player's favorite player, and I'm still working as hard as I can to be the best ever. Not the best version of me. Not the best version of the Bees. The best ever. TBE.
I still think I have a chance to be, you know, one of the best in the NBA. Like your favorite player. I'm your favorite player, slave player. You know, and it's not enough for me, for him to know that. Nah, I want the world to know, you know, so I'm still working hard as if I can be the best ever. If you doubt it, if you don't believe it, just make my story, my triumph that much better.
I don't just like that quote. I love that quote. No, I don't love that quote. I need that quote. I want to print off that quote, grind it up, and drop it into my morning coffee. I need that quote coursing through my bloodstream. Kyrie Irving could come out today and say that the earth is flat and that LeBron is a monster, and the best he could do is take silver in the quote of the year award. But Beasley, being Beasley, was not done, not even close. He knows what you think about his abilities on defense. He's heard the criticism that he can't play defense, and he's got some words for you. Quote, I'm not as bad a defender as you say I am. My help side defense has been shaky, I'll give you that. But not a lot of people can score on me on the ball. All right, see, the guy's real. He's honest. He's not claiming to be something he's not. He's not saying he's the glove or the worm. He's saying he's the bees. And that means he's not really looking to do much in the way of help side defense. If the ball is on the opposite side and you're looking for him to rotate over, you're on your own. But if the situation is right and somebody is trying to score on him straight up, he's going to do something about that. You see, the more I read these quotes, the more I never want this guy to go. What would the NBA be like without Michael Beasley declaring, quote, I just want an opportunity to play more than 15 minutes. And you know if I play more than 15 minutes, I'm going to score more than 15 points. And if I can do that for 82 games, that's an all-star level. I don't know. I'm just talking. I just want an opportunity to play basketball. This guy's so awesome. I mean, who cares that he only started 9 games in the past 4 seasons? And he's talking about being an all-star, much less the best ever. Normally I'd say, let's get to 9 starts in a season before we start talking all-star game. But I love everything about this guy. I'm not thinking all-star game for the Bees. I'm thinking 2020 Olympics. And then 2024 and 2028 right here in Los Angeles. Because my man's got that much gas left in the tank. He's a national treasure. We have to do everything we can to protect him. Look, I know we don't deserve him, but I also know we need him. We need him more than we ever have. Rock on, Mike Beasley. Rock on. Get it, Mikey.
Safe play.
I'm with you. I got your back. I don't know who else does. I don't know if anybody else does. I got you. My man. You get him 15 minutes a night. Get him 15 a night if you want 15 points from him every night. And if you get him 15 minutes, he'll get you 15 to 20. Ask him. And then if you let him start 82 games, you have yourself an all-star. And if he's an all-star, you have yourself a playoff team. And if you have yourself a playoff team, you got to look at the NBA Finals. If Michael Beasley is on the floor. I like it. Preach, Mike. Preach. Dear Jim, did Mike Bees say he, quote, plans to play at least until I'm 43, so you do the math? End quote. That's right. You do the math, I'll do the Alfredo. Signed, Eddie L. in Olive Garden.
Okay, so I've done the math on this never-ending pasta bowl. 42 different sauce and pasta combinations.
Oh, you do the math, I'm doing the Alfredo.
Olive Garden's never-ending pasta bowl with new Asiago garlic Alfredo.
That is one of the most awesome restaurant burns ever. Yeah, you do that. You do that, man. You do that math. You do that math. I'm going to do the Alfredo. That is just straight fire. Straight culinary fire. Every time I hear that, I just can't even believe how good that is. Oh, he went there. Tell me how my Alfredo tastes.
Tell me how my
I cannot
tastes.
Believe that guy went there. Every time
so I've
I hear
done
that,
the math
it's like
on
the
this
first time.
Impossible. 42 different sauce and pasta combinations.
Well, you do the math. I'm doing the Alfredo.
Atom bomb on that guy. That is great. Craig and Matt sent that on War of the Seahawks. So you've got two guys that have taken so much heat on social media for things they've said and things they've done. Eddie Lacy, who finally addressed it, and I thought a very interesting piece on ESPN.com. And also Dwight Howard, who finally addressed it with Lee Jenkins. And we're going to have that in a minute. I actually want to hit both those topics this hour before the end of the program. We'll talk to Dwight Howard next because both these guys have taken so much heat here and everywhere else. And Eddie Lacy admitted, man, it's hard. It really is hard when people are killing you on social media, killing you everywhere on the internet. And no matter how hard you work and how hard you try, and even when you've done the work and you've lost the weight and you look great, it doesn't matter. People keep going back to the original thing. And he admits that kind of put him in a bad way, put him in a bad place. It's depressing. It's hard. Yeah, I would imagine it is. And believe me, as somebody who takes plenty of heat on social media, I get that. But if you can't deal with it, don't look at your phone. Don't pick your phone up because it's not that hard to find. It's going to find you, especially if your phone's on. And if you go looking for it, forget it. Rome, did you say Beasley could be Tom Brady in shorts? I prefer Tom Brady in less. Signed, Sarah T. The T stands for thirsty. I don't think she sent that. Oh, it's Dan in Denver, of course. Sarah T. I don't know what the T stands for, but I don't think it's thirsty. I don't think her last name, I don't think her government is Sarah Thirsty. It'd be extremely ironic. It'd be one of the all-time quinky dinks if Sarah's name really was Sarah Thirsty.
Ionic.
It'd be ionic, wouldn't it, Sarah? Sarah, for the record, is your last name Thirsty? Because that would be extremely ionic.
Ionic.
The ATP. That does not stand for Ask Thirsty Pros. Ask the Pros, Sarah T. And when we come back, Lee Jenkins on Dwight Howard. You don't want to miss that.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Minnesota Twins grinding for a wild card spot. Uh-oh! Oh, that is so funny. I'm watching Bartolo Colon and the Yanks. He was up 3-0. And I'm like, this dude is just carving dudes. And my man Keith Arnold goes, yeah, until Aaron Judge hits one 900 feet. He didn't do that, but he hit one 400. Two-runner. Right on cue. You're all right, Big Sexy. When you want the straight scoop on home security, you want to ask street cops. Cops are not fans of old-school home security. You're at work, your alarm goes off, time passes. Some operator calls to see if you set off your alarm. Nope. Then the cops show, but by the time they get there, it's too late. Cops like Blink because it helps stop crime before it happens. Blink are motion-activated video cams. They're wire-free. They run on batteries that last 2 years. The instant Blink detects some scumbag snooping around your home, bam, you get an alert on your smartphone with a video clip. If it's trouble, you call 911 and then the cops roll. Blink is also a brilliant way to protect holiday deliveries on your porch. And Blink's live feed option lets you monitor your home anywhere from your smartphone. Here's the deal. Get three Blink cams for what the other guys charge for one, plus an extra 10% off. Hit blinkprotect.com/Rome. I love this product. blinkprotect.com/Rome. blinkprotect.com/Rome. As promised, We talk right now with a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Very good friend of the program. He wrote the cover story for Sports Illustrated on Dwight Howard. We are joined by Lee Jenkins. Lee, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Great, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. In fact, really good, Lee. Lee, your piece on Dwight Howard, I think, is fascinating. As you write, in 2008, Dwight Howard had more endorsement deals than LeBron James. He appeared in 7 nationally televised commercials, end quote. Lee, the idea that Dwight was having more endorsement deals than LeBron seems almost laughable right now, but how big was Dwight back in 08?
You know, Jim, it's funny because so much has changed in the NBA, I forgot myself. I mean, we're talking about somebody who, when the NBA asked its general managers who they'd pick to start a team, they picked LeBron first and Dwight Howard second. He was over Kobe back in 2008-09. I mean, you remember that year he led the Magic to the NBA Finals where they lost to the Lakers. I mean, he was clearly the best defensive player in the league at that time, and you could argue he was the most efficient scorer. I mean, their whole offense basically dump it into Dwight Howard, let him turn, let him dominate. And look, what you know, this happens with football players, with baseball players, they can fade out pretty quickly. But usually in the NBA, if a guy's really good and he's 24 years old, he's going to be really good for the next decade. And that's where I think Dwight's story is different, because the prime of his career is really where things spun out of control on him.
I mean, Lee, to that point, could you have ever imagined that back in 2008, that at some point he'd be on his 5th team in 7 seasons?
No, and I think a lot of it's the injuries and the back. I mean, I think that his athleticism was taken away from him for a few years. I think, but there was also so many off the court issues going on with him that people didn't know about. I mean, all the kids, 5 kids with 5 different women, you know, things happening, and this is pretty common with NBA players. But you know, friends of his, even family members, kind of pilfering money. Just sort of an off-court lifestyle that spun out on him. And I think when you kind of trace it back, I mean, you probably remember when he was coming out of high school, the whole storyline was this was the guy who wanted to put the cross on the NBA logo. I mean, he was almost going to be an evangelical basketball star. And I think once he got to the NBA and, you know, was a little bit tempted and seduced by the off-court lifestyle that there is in that league, I think he sort of said kind of the hell with it, you know, with everything that he'd thought about before and sort of the foundation of his life and childhood, and kind of reinvented himself off the floor in a totally different way that wasn't necessarily conducive to performance.
Lee Jenkins joining us. He's written the cover story for Sports Illustrated on Dwight Howard. I mean, there's so much interesting in that response, Lee, but in addition to that, the things that spiraled out of control for him off the floor, he also went from being on top of the game in 08 to being called soft, being the butt of jokes online, essentially an outcast. How much do you think that got to him and bothered him?
I think it bothers all these guys. I mean, you look at what's going on with Durant right now. I mean, things that happened with LeBron. I just think, I don't know if it's something about basketball, something about the NBA, the backgrounds of the players. I'm not really sure what it is, but they are bothered. There is sort of an insecurity, even with these guys who would seem otherwise superhuman. And I also think, Jim, that there was Howard's just an interesting case study for just where basketball's gone and how it shifted. Because if he came out of the draft right now, I really believe somebody would look at him and say, oh, we could put the ball in your hands. You can play make. We got to make you into a 3-point shooter. I mean, you look at what they do now with their really athletic bigs, and they make them dynamic. And back then, it was more of, no, you stay under the paint. You stay under the basket. You stay in the paint. Don't do a lot. And I think in some ways, Howard got caught between eras. Because once the game sort of changed, I think he either didn't change with it or wanted to and wasn't allowed. And that kind of depends on who you ask. But yeah, by that point, he was already sort of one of those under-the-basket robots. And that's where I think there's still some bitterness that he was capable of more, that he could have changed with the times and wasn't allowed to.
All right, so to that point, if the role of the big man has changed that dramatically and it's so different now than it was in 08, can he ever get back to the way that he used to impact games?
I don't know. I mean, and that's a great question. This guy, he's trying to shoot 3-pointers. It's like he's made 5 3-pointers in his career. You know, they're working on him. I watched him. I mean, he can handle the ball a little bit. You know, they worked on more kind of feeding him inside the 3-point line. Can he take 2 dribbles and convert, you know, and not just be that guy who catches it with his back to the basket? That's sort of what they're banking on. But listen, he's 31. And at 31, you sort of are who you are in that league. And I think that the reason I think there's some hope for him This guy went 13-13 last year for the Hawks. He shot 63%, highest percentage in the Eastern Conference. Let's say he gets to 18. You know, he's with his old coach, the guy who coached him in Orlando, Steve Clifford, was also with him in L.A. You know, if he just gets to 18-12 or something, people are going to look at this as a huge comeback story for him. And I think that coach can help him do that, because the reason you want Dwight Howard is still to protect the rim. He's still a really solid, really good defensive player. But you kind of have to feed him enough on offense, I think, to keep him engaged, because that's part of where this is. And he's liable to shut down. That's what happened in L.A. It's what happened in Houston, in Atlanta. He'll kind of shut down on teams. And I think that's where he's got the rap for being a bad locker room guy. I mean, it's just, it's interesting, Jim. I mean, he might be the most polarizing player in the NBA right now. You say the name Dwight Howard to other players, there's kind of a look you get. And that's where I think he is. He just feels like he needs to turn around kind of his whole career and image, just even for the rest of his life, beyond just basketball.
Lee Jenkins, Sports Illustrated senior writer. You know, Lee, when you say that he's polarizing, that would suggest that there are two sides to this, right? That there are some guys that will say, hey, no, he's misunderstood. He's
maybe
got an unfair rap.
Maybe he's not polarizing then. Maybe it's just the other side. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there another side? You know, you mentioned L.A. So, you know, exactly what happened in L.A. And when he looks back, what kind of thoughts does Dwight have about the move to L.A. and how that went?
Well, obviously it was a disaster. I mean, he was thinking, I think at the time, oh, I'm going to make movies. And really, he's a cautionary tale for so many NBA players. I mean, Kyrie Irving included, probably. But, you know, a guy who was, he wanted to be bigger. He wanted more. He thought there was more out there. And I don't think there was a satisfaction and appreciation for what happened in Orlando and the way that system was geared to him and how much success he had. So he comes out to L.A. He's got the bad back. You know, Kobe Bryant's immediately disappointed in him. And I think you're talking about somebody who was trying on all these personas. And again, this is common stuff. This is stuff that's still going on. It's going on with Durant right now, where it's like, well, you know, who am I? What kind of role do I want to play? So it's like, you know, he would try to grit his teeth and be the mean guy like Kobe, killer like Kobe. And then he'd try to, you know, goop around and be Superman like Shaq. And he wore those big knee pads and the headbands like he was Wilt Chamberlain or something. And I think it all spoke to sort of an anxiety and a discomfort with, you know, with who he really was, with being Dwight Howard. And that's where you have these rabbit ears that players sometimes have, where they're hearing these criticisms, when in reality, the goofy Dwight with the Skittles and the big smile that, yeah, maybe it rubs some people the wrong way, but that was the best Dwight Howard. That was the one that had the success. So he probably should have rode with what fit.
That was the best version of him. You know, you also talk about him being 31. He's the father of five kids with five different women and how that happened. Lee, do you have a sense of how much money he has lost or wasted along the way?
Oh, well, those are two different questions. I mean, there's money that he claims has been taken from him. And what happens in these situations is you have these sort of people in your circle, these associates who will bill you for, you know, you spend extravagantly. I mean, a guy like this who makes this kind of money is going to spend extravagantly, and they will bill you even more extravagantly. And that's the way you sometimes have these situations where, you know, money gets stolen. And this is something he's figuring out right now, is what kind of effort he wants to take to recoup some of that money. But he still made contracts for, what, $70 million or something for the Hawks. So it kind of reminds me of that great NBA quote. I don't know if Ewing said this. It was, you know, we make a lot, but we spend a lot.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of the Dwight Howard, I think, school right now.
Lee Jenkins joining us. Lee, really, two quick things before you go, because you mentioned Kyrie Irving and the sense that Dwight's a cautionary tale for a lot of guys, including Kyrie. What do you make of the way he's handled his situation in Cleveland and now his arrival in Boston?
Yeah, I mean, clearly he wants more. I mean, and a lot of guys do, and sometimes it works out for them. I mean, James Harden probably wanted more, and I think we can look back and say, that for him, maybe not for his ring count, but for him as a basketball player, that was the right decision, right? I mean, we've seen everything he's capable of. And I have no doubt that Kyrie is looking at Westbrook, he's looking at Harden, and he's thinking, I want to, you know, show everything that I can be. And look, that's a big bet on yourself. And you have to have some respect for it, but there's also real risk there. And, you know, those guys were playing with high-level players, Westbrook and Harden, clearly, Durant, namely. But, you know, when you're playing with LeBron, when you're getting that many shots, when you have a shot at the finals, sometimes I think there's a tendency to not really evaluate what you have. And so we'll see. Irving's making a big bet on himself. He was probably helped by where he went. You know, he didn't get shoveled off to Phoenix where he would, you know, just jack his way through 35-win seasons. It won't be like that for him there. But clearly, you watch that interview with First Take, and, you know, he's kind of still trying it out. He's sort of still figuring out. I mean, he kind of came off to me almost as like Kobe in 2009 or something. So it's all interesting kind of watching these guys in the spotlight, massive success, huge money, figure out kind of who they are. And that's something that was kind of at the heart of this Dwight Howard story.
Really good point. Good point on both sides. And you can read that story. It's the cover story of Sports Illustrated right now. Lee, I cannot let you go without asking you about the Chargers. The Los Angeles Chargers, Lee. Now, you are one of the most respected journos in the country. You are one of the most peaceful. Lee, you are one of the most peaceful people in the country. How do you feel about the first two games of the Chargers season and your feelings towards the Spanos family?
I love this guy, Koo. I think they should make a statue of him right next to Tony Gwynn and Tomlinson and Seau. I mean, he's a true San Diego hero, Koo. These have been really two of the great weeks in Charger history. For anybody who really loves the Chargers, Jim, it's so wild. I mean, you go to bars in San Diego, and they're rooting for Cutler. I mean, they rooted for the Broncos in week one. I mean, it's such an unusual dynamic where a team would move this close to their old city. And I think they thought it would help them because they keep some of their fans and they'd have some of that momentum that they built. And in reality, it's been the opposite because they've been followed by all that anger and all that outrage. And since LA is just apathy, really it's the outrage that's filled the vacuum. And I don't know if they ever could have expected that would sort of set the course for their story in this first year, is really everybody just making fun of them all the time.
Lee, is there any way, I'm not saying the Spanos would ever do this, but is there any way they could come back? Would the city take them back? Would Spanos be open to it? Could you take that relocation fee and let him keep it? Is there any way to reverse course?
Oh, the city would definitely take them back. I think it was, you know, when LeBron went back to Cleveland, I think the thing he said was, you know, it's a fine line between love and hate. And it was, and that's where it was. I mean, at least there's emotion. You know, there's passion for them. It takes a lot, really, to make San Diego. You work there. You live there. It takes a lot to make them really angry. You know, it's like a Ron Burgundy line or something would have to do it. So in this case, I think that anger is actually a sign of the devotion. But you need owners who've taken these relocation fees or are entitled to these relocation fees to forfeit that. I think that's a huge long shot. I mean, clearly it's a black eye for the league. It's embarrassing for the league. I think if they had to do it over again, they would, I don't know how they didn't see it coming, but I think they would do it differently. But at this point, from everything I hear, it's too late to reverse course. You know, in 10 years, could it happen? Yeah, I think it probably will, you know, down the road. But for now, I think San Diego will just have to be happy seeing a bunch of Chiefs fans in those seats. And, I mean, that thing's going to be painted red this weekend, that little stuff up there.
Yeah, it was last weekend, too. And the only thing better is when the Raiders play them and all of a sudden Charger fan is a Raider fan. You imagine that? Like, Charger fans repping the Raiders, rocking Raider jerseys. I mean, it's like the weirdest, most surreal thing ever.
You know, and the thing is, too, is the Chargers always had opposing fans in the stadium. I mean, I get that. You know, especially after the Spanos just firebombed their fan base. You know, you get 10, 20,000 opposed fans. I mean, more, obviously, if it's the Raiders or Broncos or the Steelers. But the problem is they're in a stadium now where those people are going to make up 75% of the crowd, right? I mean, the Chargers probably only have, you know, about 10 to 15,000 fans who are actually going in there. So, it's going to be a bad look for a long time for them.
Lee, last thought. So, when they actually get to the stadium in 2020, and then all of a sudden we're not talking about 27 or 30,000 seats, we're talking 70,000 feet, and it's not going to be our seats. It's not going to be a soccer stadium. It'll be a state-of-the-art, beautiful facility. How do you think that thing looks? I mean, it is 3 years down the road, so we don't know what the team's going to look like. But are you going to have 15,000 Charger fans in that building too?
Probably so, Jim. I mean, unless they get really good, unless something crazy happens, I would assume they'd have to rebrand after this season. But if you rebrand, you're starting over in L.A., does that help you? You're losing those 10,000 fans. So they've got a lot of hard decisions to make. And, I mean, it's one of those things where I think they thought, okay, we moved, we're out of here, it's over. And, you know, really the work is just beginning. And, you know, you talk about 3 years down the road, by then you don't have Rivers. So you don't, you know, Rivers kind of keeps you in every game. I don't really know what the end game is for this NFL and LA experiment, it's going to have to be, I think, defined by what's going to be is like a neutral site. Every game will be like a neutral site game. And these opposing fans, it will give them a chance to kind of go in there. And that's how it was the other day at StubHub from people. I would never step foot in it. But people who were there said that it just felt like you were at a neutral site game. And that's probably what it'll feel like. LA is a transplant town. It'll be an opportunity for Patriots fans to go see their team when they're in LA or Broncos fans. But I don't know how easy it's going to be to create a fan base. I mean, you looked at the TV ratings. I don't know if you saw them for last week. You know, the Chiefs and Eagles did a 7.5, 7.6 in L.A. The Chargers were in the 5.
Wow.
So in L.A., a Kansas City-Philly game did better, you know, almost 50% better than the local team. Unusual dynamic.
Yeah, it's a very unusual dynamic. I could stay on this topic for another hour, but I got to let you go, Lee. Great to have you on, Lee. You wrote a great cover story for SI and Dwight Howard. Lee, good to have you back. Thanks so much. Lee Jenkins is... He is definitely one of the best in the business. I tell you that every time he comes on. But to hear him get so fired up on the Chargers when he's normally just so objective and so measured, and it's just so personal, I got to get out. They're going to tear me up. I am way over. Sorry about that, y'all. Time now for a sports update. Here it is. Jay Berman, my bad. Jay, it's all you. Time for the ATP. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Summer's heat can cause your battery fluids to evaporate. Get your battery tested for free if it needs to be replaced. The professional parts people will help you find the battery you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices. Every day it's all coming apart for Barcelona. Up 3-0. I turned away to do an interview, and now it's 4-3. In terms of the ATP, this one's from Albuquerque. Keenan writes, Jimmo's. Jimmo's the man. Early this week, LaDainian Tomlinson criticized Zeke Elliott, and you revealed that he was part of the manual buzzer. I had no idea. How did that come about? Thanks, Key. All right, so there's a lot of history of the show. I'm constantly reminded of how many new listeners we have, and they don't realize all the ins and outs of the regular happenings, i.e. the manual buzzer. All right, so quick history. The manual buzzer is a big part of the program. At first, there was the buzzer. We would just run bad phone calls with that, a gymnasium-style buzzer. Then one day, I did a take about how I was getting a lot of phone solicitors at night calling my house at dinner. And I'd pick up the phone, or I'd be working, and they'd hit me on my desk, my office phone. And I started dropping manual buzzer on all the phone solicitors. So then we had that, the manual buzzer. Hello? Yeah, hello. Is this the man of the house? Yes. Glad that I could talk to you. If you had 5 minutes, I would... So I was doing this all the time. And then in 2010, January, I believe, Nike leaks the LT Slide Electric Glide. An 80s-style inspired dance video, and it was pretty awesome. An emailer suggested that we use that to run calls, and thus the LT manual buzzer was born. So credit that email, whoever it was. I always say to make the show better when you contribute. Well, that's one person who did. He made the show better. So that's where that came from. LT is a part of the manual buzzer. Now, to be fair, Adam Hawk ran into LT and told him that story, and even he didn't know. So don't feel badly. If you listen to the show and you didn't know that it was LT, don't feel badly because LT himself didn't know. Of course, you're probably logging more time on the show than he is, but he also did not know. True story. Let's go to the Twitter contest. Why pay more for annual protection motor oil when you can get Castrol Edge extended performance for less? It goes 15,000 miles between oil changes. Titanium strong Castrol Edge. More than just an oil, it is liquid engineering. Let's see what we got here. Mike in Buffalo tweets, wore RG3 posterizing Michael Beasley in a pickup game in Transylvania next year. The Real Left Hook tweets, New York basketball needs a savior and John Starks ain't walking through that door. Jeremy and Scani, oh, a 5 or a 6 seed. Lofty goals. Regards, parking far away at the supermarket as exercise. PJ in the Mile High. We do not fit Robert's narrative either. Signed, lowlights from the film sessions of RG Meade's former luxurious career in the NFL. And Dustin in Portland, obviously looking for the block. Dustin, quote, "Looks like the Spanos plan has come crashing down in a hurry." Signed, Bo Diaz. Dustin, you're one more tweet like that from being blocked. And I pride myself on never blocking anybody on Twitter. Go to my account. Check anything on Twitter. Check the analytics. I've never blocked anybody. A couple of you on this show. But I've never blocked anybody for some of the crap you shoot at me. But I'll block you, Dustin. One more Bo Diaz reference and you'll be blocked. Yankees 5, Twins 3. Like I said, when I started the interview with Lee Jenkins, it was 3-0. Let's go to the huge call. The Kingsmen are back. It's time to save the world with the help of their American cousins, the Statesmen. Get ready for a proper spy movie. Kingsmen, The Golden Circle, only in theaters and IMAX September 22nd. Once again, this guy's one of the most respected journalists in this country. Very measured, very impartial, very objective, unless you ask him about the Chargers.
I love this guy, Koo. I think they should make a statue of him right next to Tony Gwynn and Tomlinson and Seau. I mean, he's a true San Diego hero, Koo. These have been really two of the great weeks in Charger history. For anybody who really loves the Chargers, Jim, it's so wild. I mean, you go to bars in San Diego, and they're rooting for Cubs. I mean, they rooted for the Broncos in week one. I mean, it's such an unusual dynamic where a team would move this close to their old city. And I think they thought it would help them because they'd keep some of their fans and they'd have some of that momentum that they built. And in reality, it's been the opposite because they've been followed by all that anger and all that outrage. And since L.A. is just apathy, really it's the outrage that's filled the vacuum. And I don't know if they ever could have expected that would sort of set the course for their story in this first year is really everybody just making fun of them all the time.
Boom. Out of here.
Lee Jenkins, quote, "This guy, Koo, is a San Diego hero and deserves his own statue right alongside Tony Gwynn, Junior Seau, and others." That's incredible. Lee Jenkins, senior writer for SI. He's got the cover story this week with Dwight Howard. We had Alex Hornibrook from Wisconsin. Brian Arakpo, Tennessee Titans linebacker. In case you missed it, and it usually takes a day or two to get to it, or a week, that's fine too. The Jim Rome Podcast, episode number 4, dropped yesterday. It's as good as we've done. I'm not going to say it's the best, but it might be. Certainly as good as anything we've done, according to a lot of you. See for yourself. Dirk Nowitzki and William McGinnis. We're the two guests there, and your calls off the voicemail made it. If you're on Apple, check iTunes. If you're an Android user, go to Google Play. If you do not have a smartphone, just go to jimrome.com. And we're coming back strong tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being a part of it. Thanks to the XR4 Ti. See you next time. We're out.